Welcome to Atlanta Business Radio. My name is Carrie Tegeter, and I'm your guest host today, sitting in for Miss Amy Otto. I'm joined by her partner in crime, Mr. Lee Cantor. How are you today, Lee?
I am fired up. Big show today. I'm excited. We have a big celebrity with us.
Oh, yes.
And Charles Green here. Too.
Welcome, Mr. Green. Yes, I'm excited about our show today as well.
So who do we got?
Today we have Mr. Charles Green with Charles Green & Company. Thank you for joining us.
You're welcome.
Mr. Green, why don't you tell us a little bit about what you do and what's going on with you right now?
Well, I'm a banker. I'm a small business financing advisor that has been out for 30 years trying to stimulate our economy by sowing the seeds of money around into a lot of small business enterprises and helping them grow into larger ones.
Now, you said you're a banker. Are you really a banker at a bank? Or
over the last 30 years, I have been employed by a bank for at least 20 of those years, from everything from business developer officer, a credit analyst, to a bank president.
And so how'd that go for you, the banking world?
I've got a few scars, but everything seems to have healed. I'm doing fine.
But now you're not part of a bank anymore? Now you're solo?
That's right. That's right. I've taken my 30 years experience and am turning it into going directly to the marketplace to furnish information to small businesses directly, because this is probably the most challenging period we've been through for small businesses to get external financing.
Well, let me ask the question of the hour, which is, why doesn't there seem to be any money available for small businesses today?
Well, there is money available. It's just navigating to it, and it's going to be underwritten a lot more more difficult than it has been in the past. People have become very risk averse. Banks are under a lot of capital pressure, and small businesses really have to prepare themselves for that and understand that they're going to have to be a lot more sophisticated about how they ask.
Hmm. Well, what about the president's $30 billion small business program that I've heard so much about?
That program offers a lot of help because it essentially helps generate additional resources into banks through a it's a mini TARP, if you would, although they don't want to call it that.
Right.
It will provide preferred stock investment into small community banks, which were largely ignored by the earlier TARP program. And this is aimed at small business financing. Banks will have to pay Uncle Sam back at a lower rate the more small business financing that they provide during the period that the money's outstanding. And for small businesses, it also includes some provisions to accelerate their access to SBA lending by raising the cap on a loan from $2 million to $5 million, and will reinstate a stimulus feature that allowed the SBA guarantee to rise to 90% for the bank. So we think this will be greeted in the marketplace with a lot of bankers anxious to make loans and small businesses who get a real deal to get this financing.
Now I have a small business. What would be my process? Like, what should I do to get this loan?
A lot of the bank's application process has to do with understanding who you are and what risk and opportunity your business exhibits. So they're going through this very careful evaluation. And that is what has become more difficult, is the level of scrutiny that the business is going to be under and the appetite for risk that the bank has. And what I'm doing in my consultancy is trying to address this through publication of information that helps small businesses understand exactly what challenges they face and how to navigate them.
Now, can a startup get one of these loans that has no track record of any kind?
They absolutely can, but it's going to be even more difficult than it has been in the past. And you really have to put together a killer application that demonstrates with a lot of certainty how you're going to make your projected revenues and how those revenues will be profitable.
But is it something that the entrepreneur can do by themselves, or do they need to hire an outside consultant that knows kind of the ins and outs of the process?
It just depends. I think anyone can do it on their own. It just may take longer if they're not really versed in the financial aspects of their business. They need to know how to read a tax return and read a financial statement.
So if I had a book like the SBA loan book, how would that help me?
It's an excellent resource. Thank you very much. That book I authored in 1999 and revised it in 2005. And again, the third edition will be released in November, the SBA loan book edition 3. That book really displays the information needed to support a loan application and helps you understand exactly what each of those components is comprised of, how to construct it, how to discuss it with your banker, and how to respond to their request for additional information.
So do you think that the banking and financing will get easier sometime in the near future, or how do you see that playing out for us?
I think it's going to be a longer recovery than that. I think it's going to be at least 5 years for a lot of banks to restore their capital strength and for the whole landscape to sort of settle down. We're going to see a lot more banks go away through failure and through consolidation. Mm-hmm. And until that really plays out and there's some stability in the marketplace, I think it's going to be more challenging for all bank customers.
Now, are there going to be more banks that are too big to fail?
The too big to fail is really over through the Financial Regulatory Reform Act. And what that has done is to essentially create a bankruptcy process where the FDIC and the Comptroller of the Currency can go in and dismember a bank, sell off the parts, and liquidate it, much like bankruptcy is for small businesses. Heretofore, it was all or nothing. Someone had to be able to buy that bad bank for the problem to be resolved, and no one could buy the largest bank in the country.
Now, when you're dealing with banking, obviously that's one type of financing for a business. What are some of the other ones that a small business can use?
There's been a growing popularity of small investors called angels. That marketplace has grown enormously over the last 10 years. Although I have to caution most small business owners, it's typically their interest is going to be typically in businesses that have a real out strategy that is definable other than your retirement. So they're looking for businesses that have a definite capacity to grow and to either retire their investment through much larger investments or through the sale of the business.
Now, when you're working with a small business client, when you were back being a banker, how do you think the relationship should be with a banker and their small business client? Is it a collaborative thing? Are you advising them in any way, or are you just there to give them money when they need it?
Call me old-fashioned, but I like the consultative banking relationship where there was a mutual trust. There was more than a transactional relationship where the clients come to you for advice, and in those questions and in the amount of information you begin to develop on each client, you learn more about their business and you can really better serve what they need so that mutually you have a great relationship going forward. Today's environment segregates the people who can give advice from those that need it. There's business developers out there that are just running around chasing leads and throwing business cards over their shoulder. Mm-hmm. And they're incented to keep looking for the next client, knocking on the next door, without really spending the time getting to know their client and building a relationship.
So I see that the name of your book is the SBA Loan Book, the third edition.
Yes.
So how can the Small Business Administration help small business owners through the financing?
SBA partners with banks to provide a credit enhancement for small business loans. Mm-hmm. And simply stated, that's a guarantee. So they will provide a financial guarantee to the bank for your business, which will give the bank confidence to be a little more
aggressive
mm-hmm. in underwriting the loan, giving them certainly longer terms as prescribed by the program. You can get a 25-year real estate loan without any balloons or short maturities on it with an SBA guarantee. You can't do that with a conventional bank loan.
Right.
Right. And aren't there special programs out there for women-owned businesses and minority-owned businesses as well through the Small Business Association?
Do you want the official answer or my answer?
Let's do your answer. That's what I'm going for, the expert's answer.
There are a lot of programs to market the SBA programs to every demographic group described as a minority, be it with ethnicity or national origin or gender or military service or right. if you're left-handed or right-handed.
Right.
But when credit underwriting starts, those advantages end. You get to the SBA a little faster, maybe through a different door, but you don't get any breaks when it comes to underwriting the transaction because the lender has to live with that, and the bank is going to retain a portion of that loan without a guarantee. So they've got to make sure that first and foremost is the ability to be repaid.
Right, and banks aren't really in the risk-taking business, are they?
They're not. They're rent. They rent money. They don't invest it.
Right. So like where you had mentioned angel investors earlier or even venture capital, they're more willing to take some risk knowing that a portion of those investments are going to fail, where the bank is more hesitant.
Well, I don't know if they're that aggressive these days like they may have been back in the 80s and 90s where they would put a bet on 20 companies and just needed one to pay off to cover everything. But certainly they can underwrite the risk and the opportunity a lot with the idea of a large upside. If the bank takes a risk on your loan, the amount of interest that it will earn over the life of that term is the maximum they're going to receive out of that, whereas an investor might double, triple, or quadruple their money.
Right, so they have a different their objective is different. They're not playing on the same kind of play sheet. Yeah, the banker's objective is just to make sure the loan is repaid, and the angel or the VC is looking for the home run.
That's correct.
The success of the business, right?
That's correct.
So how do we, the angel programs, how do we go to an expert like you, or is there a way for small businesses to find them other than just Googling investors or angels or?
There's a lot of networks around Atlanta that include, I think there's Angel Chicks and there's Angel Technology Investors. There's several network groups that meet to introduce investors with prospective investments.
Mm-hmm.
And one more popular one that has started up in the last few years is called Startup Lounge.
I was going to ask about that because I do get invitations and things like that for my entrepreneur clients as well to go to the Startup Lounge. So I was real curious about that. Do you mention those things in your book?
Not this book. That okay. will be in a different book about more a broader list of financing options.
Right, because there's isn't there like cheap money and expensive money? And
yeah.
like the angel money may seem like it's cheap, but you're giving up a share of your business. You're giving up equity in your business, whereas if you get a loan from a bank, you're not. You're just repaying that debt.
Well, that's very true. A lot of small business owners are hesitant to give up any control of their business. And as I counsel them, would you rather have 100% of nothing or 50% of something?
Right.
So it's all a matter of how you view your business and what your risk strategy is and what your long-term out exit strategy is.
Now, in your consulting firm, what are the type of clients that you work with?
I work with a lot of small business owners who are, for the most part today, struggling with the debt that they already have.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They have gotten into a lot of leverage during good times, and some of them are not loans I would have made back then. And I'm trying to help them figure out strategies to get out of that and to lower their leverage and build up more equity.
Now, do you help them? Like, do you become a partner, or do they just hire you on a retainer? What is the relationship?
They hire me on a retainer, and I really coach them on how to deal with their lending relationship or their investors. I don't try to go in and speak for them because I know as a bank president, I didn't want to talk indirectly to any clients. I need to look you in the eye and understand that you understand the gravity of the situation.
Well, Charles, thank you so much for all the great information. And again, this is Charles Green and Company. How could we learn more about you and get in touch with you if we want to learn more?
My website is www.charlesgreenco.com.
So now consulting is what you do full time, right? Where you're writing and consulting?
That's correct.
Now, the consulting part, I'm a little curious. I hate to go back on this,
please.
when you're consulting with somebody, are you looking at their business as a banker, or are you looking at them through as being an entrepreneur? Because, you know, it's kind of two different things.
Well, I can wear either hat. I own my own business for 8 years. I've worked for a venture capitalist in which I was involved with generally a half dozen companies at a time. And I've worked in a commercial bank, so I've borrowed money and I've loaned money and I've invested money and
right.
To investors. So, you know, that gives me a lot of advantages of understanding every perspective.
So then you can, when you're consulting with them, are you helping them, like, they have an existing business that may or may not be doing well, and you're just worried about the money aspect and the finance, or are you, like, saying, hey, this is a growth strategy, you might want to pursue this, or I have these contacts in this field? Like, how involved do you get?
Quite involved. A lot of the issues around money have a root somewhere else. It could be a governance issue. It could be a human resources issue. It could be a product delivery issue. So I will work with them as much as I can directly. If we need a third party, then I bring in a third party. I'm involved in a client right now where we just brought in an attorney to sort out some governance issues with their shareholders. I am not licensed to practice law, so I certainly know my limitations, but it is more than beyond just the loan documents.
And so is that more fulfilling for you to get involved in that level? Or?
Well, it's just what I know, so I sell, you know, the time that I know how to perform. And after 30 years and 500 clients and a couple hundred million dollars worth of financing of some sort, you pick up a lot and learn a lot of experience.
Right. And again, the website?
www.charlesgreenco.com.
Awesome. Well, it was a pleasure meeting you. And then can they get information on the book there too, or is the book available at bookstores everywhere?
They can get information there, or it's on Amazon or in any bookstore.
Cool.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for all the great information, and I look forward to reading the book.
Thank you.
Our next guest is Miss Betsy Learman. I'm excited about Betsy because she is from my neck of the woods out in Suwannee. She has a store called Cartridge World Suwannee. Betsy, why don't you tell us a little bit about what type of services that you guys offer?
Sure. Thank you. Cartridge World Suwannee, we are in business to refill and remanufacture printer cartridges for just about any kind of printer, copier, or fax machine. We actually remanufacture those cartridges for a laser cartridge, for example. We actually open up that cartridge. We replace any of the parts that have any wear and tear after a normal use with new parts. Mm-hmm. We replenish the toner to the specifications of the manufacturer. Then we seal that cartridge back up, test it, and then get it out to the businesses. So our primary business is to refill and remanufacture both ink and toner cartridges. Mm-hmm. And the beauty of that is that it ends up saving our customers a significant amount of money. It's going to be at least 30%
wow.
savings over what you would pay for new cartridges at, you know, one of the local office superstores. So that's our primary business. In addition to refilling and remanufacturing cartridges, in this situation where there isn't a remanufactured solution available, mm-hmm. we do provide new original equipment manufacturer cartridges as well.
Okay.
And we also offer some printers in our stores as mm-hmm. well as offering printer repair.
Okay, so this is like a retail store. You have a storefront there. How big is your store?
Well, we have, it's a small front retail office. We have about 1,200 square feet in our mm-hmm. total retail location, and about a third of that is dedicated to the retail space.
Now, this is a franchise, is that right?
It is.
How did you come across that?
Through lots of research. Mm-hmm. My husband and I were both in technology-oriented fields in corporate America for many, many years. I won't tell you how many. And we just were ready to kind of do something on our own. So we started researching all kinds of businesses and franchises and really kind of stumbled upon Cartridge World. We wanted, you know, something with a really strong value proposition,
mm-hmm.
and we really wanted to be in a business-to-business sphere versus some of the other types of opportunities there are out there. And when we found Cartridge World, the thing that really appealed to us was that it was such a, you know, everybody prints. I mean, you could say everybody breathes. Well, everybody prints. You know, everybody has a home office printer. Every business out there prints. Every school out there prints. Every medical office prints. And so there's obviously a large demand for what we do, and people hate to spend huge amount of money. I mean, cartridges are crazy
and it
expensive.
Is very, extremely expensive. Now, you mentioned schools. I do know that you guys do a lot with the schools in the area. Can you tell me a little bit about what you do for the schools?
I mean, we do work with lots of schools in the area, and obviously schools are going through a tough time right now with all their budgets constricting. And
I can tell from my supply school list. I can definitely tell. So
it gets bigger every year, doesn't it?
It does. It really does.
Yes, and their budgets are really constricting, and obviously one of the main things that we do for schools is we provide them the remanufactured cartridges at a great savings. I mean, our schools save hundreds, if not thousands, of dollars by using us. I know one school in Atlanta, it actually was a small liberal arts college, estimated that in 1 year they saved over $10,000 by using remanufactured product.
And that's really important because that's money they could use toward books and, you know, other resources, you know, band equipment, things like that. So that's amazing.
Absolutely. And another angle that, you know, people don't really think of as much that we do that helps schools save money and also teaches a really good lesson to the students and the faculty is that we offer what we call a recycle rewards program where actually the students and faculty and the parents are encouraged to bring in their empty cartridges from home or from their businesses and donate them to the school. And then Cartridge World, we will come and pick up those empties, and then we will donate for each and every one of those cartridges back to the school so that they can put that money either towards technology, to other cartridges. Sometimes the PTA controls that money and uses it for things for the school, like a new playground or what have you. But in addition to the funds that brings into the school and the savings that it brings into the school, it really educates the students and gets them recycling minded.
Right, because it's so very important for the environment and things like that. So that's great. I think that's a great project you guys have going on. Now, how can families and other businesses save money from refilling the cartridges exactly? Like, take me through the process of what happens exactly.
Well, I've probably got two stories to tell there. Okay. One is for the folks that are just using the cartridges for home use on their home printers. And basically, they would come into our retail location, and we're open 10 to 6, actually 9 to 6, Monday through Friday, and 10 to 3 on Saturdays. And they just bring their empty cartridges in with them. We keep an inventory of cartridges that are already refilled. And, you know, we're talking a lot about cartridges. We do HP, Epson, Samsung, Lexmark, Dell, many, many brands of cartridges, both for inkjet and laserjet printers. But your walk-in customers will come in with their empty cartridges, and we would just basically swap them for a newly refilled product, and it's going to save them probably 30% off of what they would pay, and more oftentimes. And they go on within a very, you know, 1 minute can be the, you know, the exchange time. They're not having to wait, you know, or drop it off and wait for, you know, hours or days or what have you. It's a very quick and convenient way to get their cartridges and save money.
Now, when I've worked with the Cartridge World before, and when I put in their Cartridge World cartridge in my printer, sometimes it says not an authentic HP. Does that affect anything, or that's just HP's way of trying to get me to feel guilty and only buy it, their brand?
Well, you know, sometimes you can get that type of a message, and we oftentimes have ways to override that message. And, of course, the motivation for the manufacturers is because where they make their money is by selling those new cartridges.
Right.
So they are trying to do what they can to keep you from, you know, buying a remanufactured product. But at the same time, we do have many techniques and tips on how you can override those types of messages and get
it's not hurting the printer in any way, right? It's the same. The ink is ink, right?
Absolutely. Well, I wouldn't say ink is ink because we have hundreds of different types of ink that we use
in
our store. But, yes, we are using the original equipment manufacturer's cartridge. That's going back into the printer. We do not refill any compatible cartridges or non-OEM cartridges.
Right.
We often do replace the chips on these cartridges, so you're getting a new chip and you won't have any kind of message whatsoever when you put that cartridge in your printer. But the other side of that, the engagement with the businesses, is slightly different than what we do with our walk-in customers that come in off the street. Okay. And we actually go out and meet the different businesses in our community. And once they decide that they would like to do business with us, we set up an online order facility for them if they like to order online.
That is so much easier.
Yeah, it's super. It's awesome because, they're able to just, click on it and, indicate that I need one of these and one of these and submit it to us. And then we bring it over to them either the same day or within 24 hours.
Okay, so you deliver it back to them.
We do. Wow. And then we pick up their empty cartridges at the time that we deliver.
So you basically could have a scheduled day and time for any business to come like once a week and switch everything out and be on a schedule. That
wow,
sounds
that's
great.
Handy.
That's very handy.
Yeah.
Now, can you talk a little bit about the franchise choice and all that part of it? Because a lot of our listeners are in that either – some of them are recently laid off and they're deciding what should I do. And, franchising is an option, obviously. Was it difficult for you when you were, because it seems like there's so many choices. And were you always intending to do it with your spouse? Like you said, okay, we're going to do this together. Or was it when it was time to decide, was it one of you going to do it while the other one worked? Can you talk about that a little bit?
We, as I said earlier, we both kind of came from corporate jobs.
But was it at the timing? Was it the same time you were both looking at this?
Yeah, we really had just kind of come to the point that we had just decided we're ready to make a move and do something together. So
right.
That was our path.
Sure.
Many times folks do it individually and then the spouse will join on later or not join at all and they do it with a partner.
Right.
But that was our path.
Now, when you were looking at all the different choices and you said you wanted B2B, you had certain criteria that you wanted. Was it overwhelming? Like, did you use a franchise broker or did you just went out on the internet and Googled franchises? Like, what was your process?
Well, we started by Googling and, saw all the options out there. But then we did find a franchise consultant.
Uh-huh.
And he kind of led us through the process. And I highly recommend that.
Right.
They work with you and they do, kind of aptitude and interest testing. And they find out what your skills are and what you're good at. And then they try to match you up with the type of franchise that would be appropriate for you.
That is great. I didn't even know that they did that, but that's great. They have the aptitude test and things like that.
So what did they rule out for you?
we had some very definite criteria.
Like no pets. I'm not going to do pets.
And we also decided early on that work-life balance was really important to us.
Right.
And so we didn't want to get in the food and beverage, the restaurant
right,
industry
late
at all.
Late nights, weekends.
Weekend.
And, right.
We want to have time with our families and to do the other things that we're interested in. And we both have very strong B2B backgrounds. So it was a natural fit for us to go that direction. But it really needs to be something that you have an aptitude for. Mm-hmm. One franchise isn't perfect for everyone, but there are certainly so many different opportunities out there. If you match them with your skills and abilities, there's
right.
something out there for you.
So now you're a franchise owner and you're a small business owner. What has been different for you from being that corporate person where you just showed up in this big, monolith and you were just doing your job and that was your job? And now everything you do impacts the life of your business. Before you were kind of a cog in a machine, but now you're the machine. So how has that changed from the mentality of being that business owner now as opposed to being kind of a worker bee?
Well, you stay awake at night a little bit more. But you also have a lot of flexibility and you can do it the way you want to within the guidelines of the franchise,
sure.
of course. And they give you, good suggestions and processes and things of that nature to make sure you're able to be successful. One of the big eye openers and everyone needs to consider when they move towards franchises, healthcare.
All right.
We won't go down that road, but you know, that was a big eye opener once we had to take upon that ourselves.
Right.
And it's certainly something for everyone to be aware of in you know, the environment that we live in. But you know, it's fun to be a small business owner. It's fun to have the flexibility and to be able to, you know, if I want to, you know, advertise in a particular area, I can choose to do that.
Right.
I have to put the money up for it, and it's my money. There's a difference there than corporate corporate world. But, you know, it's fun to go out and represent yourself as opposed to, you know, and our franchise, of course, as opposed to representing a monolith.
Right. Now, have you found it more rewarding in that, you know, your victories you have now are more personal, like they're your victories? Mm-hmm. Do you find that more rewarding?
Absolutely. I mean, absolutely. We call it our macaroni and cheese. You know, we made our macaroni and cheese today, you know.
That's cute. I like that.
But yeah, I mean, everything is, you know, directly comes back to you.
Right.
You know, it's.
And how long now have you had the franchise?
We actually just last week celebrated our fourth anniversary in business.
Congratulations. Oh,
wow. And we've been very blessed during the time. I mean, we've actually managed to grow every year over year.
Very good.
And we're in the top 5 to 10% consistently of all the franchises nationwide. So we're very pleased with the progress over 4 years.
And what do you attribute that success to?
Hard work.
Just putting in the time.
Yeah. I mean, my husband and I are a good team. I do, you know, the outside sales and marketing, and he does operations. And
it's a great balance.
Yeah. And we try not to look over each other's shoulders too much and you know, both work really hard.
Well, kudos to you, because I'm not so sure that I could work that closely with my husband, although I do love him so very much. Yeah. But that's great that you guys can work it out like that.
And lots of time, quality time together, right?
Yeah.
Except now the business and your personal life kind of intermesh.
You know, we are able to compartmentalize very well. But, you know, honestly, when we're working, I'm usually out and about doing sales. And, you know, he's more in the store.
Right.
It's not like we're, you know, right there with each other, you know, 24/7. But we definitely compartmentalize when we come home and you know, make it family time when we're at home.
That's awesome. Great success story.
Yes. Love it. I love to hear those success stories.
So what's the best way for people to find out more about your store and where you're at and things like that?
Absolutely. Well, we're located in Suwannee, and our specific website is www.cartridgeworldsuwannee.com. But for folks that are outside the Suwannee area that want to find out about a Cartridge World local to them, they can go to www.cartridgeworldusa.com. And there's actually a locator in there where you can put in your zip code and you'll be able to find the closest Cartridge World to your location.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. Thank both of you, Charles Green and Ms. Betsy Lehman, for being with us at Atlanta Business Radio. And the best of luck to you both.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
And we will see you guys next week on Atlanta Business Radio.